This is why we love racing in all its forms.
And it's Lock and Varance, Pride's Easy Feed Victoria Cup.
The rail now for Zipping Rambo goes through in the Sandown Cup.
Twilight Payment, what a ride, what a win in a cup we'll never forget.
For the next hour, RSN is cracking the codes.
Morning, everyone, and welcome to Cracking the Codes as we wander into spring. And isn't that a good feeling? And the crowds might be back sometime soon. Who knows? I've got enough company, though. I've got Dan and Simone. How are you guys?
Good morning. Oh,
thanks, Matt.
How's your week been, Simone? You had a tricky horse, didn't you?
Oh, no, it wasn't tricky. It's just any time anyone that has a new off-the-track thoroughbred, I'm sure, can relate that going out to a new place for the first time can perhaps be a little bit... present you with a little bit of anxiety and all of that. But anyway,
wouldn't be like Simone to get a bit anxious, Dan, would it?
No.
And that's a silly thing. I'm not actually an anxious person. I just was overthinking breaking down on the ring road up a hill with a ton of horses in the back of the float. And
this is the legendary First Crush, isn't it?
It is First Crush, who was trained by Chris Munts and also Amy McDonald at Ballarat for a few starts as well. So, and an indoor arena is always... well, can be a little bit spooky and a bit echoey for horses. So for a horse that had never seen an indoor, I'm guessing, and been in one, he was absolutely brilliant. Fantastic. So
there was nothing for you to freak out about?
No, nothing at all. He did present that I think now he's never been on until I've picked him up, on a straight load float. A lot of them are trucked or they stand on an angle in a float. But that's okay. He's a very sensible horse, he's shown me, and he... managed to hop on and hop off and without too much trouble. And it's another thing that he's learnt now to go, because I only have a straight load float and had another horse in there as well to help him along. And it was a very, very productive exercise. And I don't know when I'll be out going on the cross country course or anything yet, but it's all a positive step. So, I mean, you know, I love the off the track thoroughbreds. Yeah. I love greyhounds that are retired, and and with the greyhounds, I know you
Simone's
guys have
joint's
told
virtually
you,
a retirement village. Dan, it is.
They
all sit around on the balcony with blankets on their laps.
A menagerie of retired racing
listening,
animals.
Listening to Mozart.
Oh, I don't know about Mozart, but I know I've told you that I adopted a greyhound out a couple of months ago, and I keep getting photos from the new owners, and he actually sleeps. Her husband goes off to work early in the morning and he comes and sleeps on the bed with her, head on the pillow. And then when they arrive home from work every day, he's on their bed in all their pillows. And it's brilliant. I just love it. I love these type of things. I think the whole cycle of racing, you know, we have an obligation to our horses and greyhounds. And when we can provide them with a great life or facilitate them to have a great life with someone else, it's very, very rewarding.
Have you been buying ponies this week too, Dan?
No, I haven't, but I did have a pony have its first start. There's a group of friends that we had a runner at Cranbourne last Saturday. Last Sunday.
Tell us about the name and what the name means.
Oh, we renamed it. It came from the UK and it was named 9320. And then it went to Hong Kong and had one start there, and they renamed it as they often do, and it was called Grandma Win. Not Grandma, it's Grand, Granma, Grandma Win. Anyway, we thought, oh, we've got to change this. No one agreed.
Just before you tell us about that, how did you get hold of this horse that had been all over the world? How did it come to you guys?
Well, actually, the horse, it's not a bad story within itself. The horse was trained for that one start by Casper Founds, a big owner over there, purchased the horse. He had a few issues. Casper then used the horse as the companion for Classic Legend when he was in quarantine. And at that stage, the horse had had a few issues and he was just bringing him back. And, of course, Casper Founds is the brother-in-law of Clint Hutchison from Racing.com, and then decided, well, is it worthwhile having a crack? We'll bring him to Australia and all that sort of stuff. And that's how that part came about. And the horse hadn't raced for 2.5 years. You know, when you've heard the stories of trainers come on and they say, oh, I don't know where the money's coming from because we haven't backed it. I haven't told anyone to back it. Classic case the other day. This was backed off the map. And the ownership group had decided that its racing pattern is to get back beyond midfield. It hadn't raced for 2.5 years, Simone, and we thought, well, what we'd like to see is it just finding the line. You know, we can't tell our friends and that to back it. We can't back it ourselves. And it was $10 when we were doing that. It started $3.50. None of us backed it.
Had it trialled well publicly?
It got better with each trial, but it was nothing when it was on heavy ground. So it was, you could have a flutter and maybe if you took a quaddie, you'd throw it in type of thing. But for the money that come for it, the WhatsApp group that we've got together just for the Horse Hello broadcast was just pinging, going off left, right and centre in the 5 minutes before the race, thinking the Hutchbuster had left everybody out. And it was ridiculously backed off the map. But the horse went like we thought it would go, which was terrific. It found the line and went well. But the name Hello Broadcast is Darren Frindell's in the horse and Matthew Hill and myself. So there's a few race callers. Jason Tan, who's well known with his links in New Zealand, and obviously Clint Hutchison and his wife, Amy. So the Hello Broadcast is when you're in the race calling box and the phone rings, and you'll often hear it if there's going to be a late scratching and there's a delay when the runners are at the stalls. The race caller would pick up the phone, Hello Broadcast. So that's where that name came from.
And when it's quite funny when the race broadcaster, someone picks up the phone and says, Hello Broadcast. So there's someone at the scales, and Dan, sometimes they're over explaining something, and the broadcaster goes, Yep. Yep.
I'm on air now.
Yep, on air.
Would you like that cup of tea now or not? Once upon a time.
Yeah. Did you watch that doco on Netflix last night? Nope. Yep. So, well, it did run well, Dan. Hello, broadcast. So that you've got something to look forward to.
We were pleased.
Enver Jusifovic.
Enver Jusifovic trains the horse. Yeah, EJ. So we're hoping that we get a bit of fun out of the horse and a good excuse that when things open up, when the double vaccine comes in, we'll be able to get to the track and enjoy.
And Matt, you better update us on Maldestro.
Oh,
is it Maldestro?
Trialled like a camel about a week and a half ago. Thanks for opening up that wound, Simone. The kids are in therapy.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
We've all been talking about our horses and
or a dromedary.
And...
No, a total, whichever the slowest of the version of camels that you mentioned. No, he's going like a bustard, sadly. So the dream is over. Unless the wet track was not in its favour. But I had a look at the jump out and I thought, there's nothing in this that I could possibly pluck out and be encouraged by.
Yep.
Oh, so does he have another trial? What's the process now?
Oh, God, he'd probably go slower. I don't know. I'm too depressed to talk about it, Simone, because you know my whole life revolves around Maldestro, nothing else. So, no, it's been a savage blow. Hey, we can't swear or say anything naughty or anything this morning because we've got a priest on.
Oh, well, we're lucky he wasn't on last week. You were letting them fly. I was a bit blue last week, wasn't I?
So I must have known that Father Brian Glasheen was coming on this week, so I got all my nasty stuff out of the way last week.
Well, he can forgive you for all your sins, and my God, there'll be a few sins there.
I'm sure he's been doing that for a long, long time. Didn't he baptise you?
I think Father Steele baptised me. Okay. Glash came along after that. Glash and I used to go to the trots in the Jazzmarilla Great Ambition era, Dan.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Mooneyong Way, knocked him off in the
eye. What a magnificent-looking horse Jazzmarilla was.
Yeah, she was the Sydney champ. I think Gavin Lang drove... Great Ambition was the Sydney filly. Jazzmarilla, I think, was Gavin Lang, and Mooneyong Way knocked him off in the Oaks in about 80-something, and Glash and
early
I went,
80s.
And then he and I had a big argument about a protest in a Truro Memorial that nearly came to fisticuffs in the Royal Hotel. So all these things will be brought up this morning. And
fisticuffs with a priest?
Well, not really. I mean, you can't.
No matter how you explain that, you could not win that argument, could you? Imagine that, Simone. You know, I got into a fight with a priest.
Well,
straight away, you think, oh, you're in the wrong mode.
I would never have gone toe-to-toe with Glash because I knew he had someone else on side.
Yeah.
Who I didn't have on side. For
so you got
reasons.
Baptized, you're a Catholic, and you turned atheist. What happened there?
Oh, if I was brutal, I'd say I came to my senses. But no,
I just changed. Probably going to school across from the Catholic girls' school. It just, I don't know, and the nuns over there and the rest of it.
Yeah, we had nuns at St. Bernard's Primary School, and Father Glasheen was the local priest at the St. Bernard's Catholic Church in Bacchus Marsh. Very good friend of my mum and dad, and good friend of mine too. And he's a good winning owner, Dan.
He certainly is, and it would have been a massive thrill. Last Saturday night, there were two Group 1s at Bendigo. The pacing Group 1 was the Caduceus Classic, supported by the Victoria Harness Racing Club. First time it had been run at that level at Group 1, and it was a terrific field. And Triple Eight won the race, trained by Jess Tubbs and driven by Greg Sugars. Greg was very emotional. Gareth Hall, our own Gareth Hall, did an interview with Greg after the race, and it was the second time in about the last 12 months that my eyes started to well up. I'm getting soft as I get older, and it's well worth listening to, Matt.
Well, let's have a listen now.
Jess, congratulations. How about that?
Oh, that's just amazing. So proud of him. Rap that Greg drove him so well, as always. And, yeah, just so thrilled for the owners. I'm shattered they can't be here. They'll be hopefully jumping up and down, having some drinks at home. But oh, I can feel my phone going off in my pocket, and I've already had a very excited phone call from Mum. So yep. Just thrilled.
You guys do a lot of work. You love this game. Brought up in the game from wonderful harness racing families. But Greg, how about this? You've driven a lot of feature race winners over your time, but to drive this for Jess, how do you feel?
Oh, this is amazing, Gareth. You know, like, we were lucky enough to win our first Group 1 with moments like these last week, earlier this year, which was a sort of a bittersweet sort of moment for us because we couldn't actually be there to finish the job off for ourselves. But, full credit to Jess, really. I've only driven this horse, this preparation, pretty much at the races. Yeah. She's done all the work at home, and I'm so proud of her.
So,
no, it means a lot.
You're making us all cry here. Because I know how hard Jess works. She does a great job at the Meadows. Yeah. She's up at 4:30, 5 o'clock to feed the horses by your driving. It is a team effort, but it's all worth it when something like this happens.
It absolutely is, Gareth. And like I've said in the past, I've been lucky enough that, I'm out in the limelight and get a lot of the accolades, but yep. A lot of people don't realise that it truly is a team effort at most stables, but particularly ours. It's a family involvement, and Jess does, she does probably more work at home than what I do, so pleased that she can be here and be a part of this tonight with me.
Jess, why do you love this horse so much? As Greg pointed out, you drive him all of the time. Why have you got such a great relationship with him?
Oh, look, he's really grumpy. he constantly tries to bite me and kick me, but I've got a bit of a vein of horses at home that are like that. And I don't know, I just started jogging Bart when he came in this time and, stuck with him. And, I did say to Greg recently, he is better than I realised that he was. And if you need to jump back on, you can. So I'm pretty rapt that he's let me keep my drive, at least at home.
I swear the first time I heard that interview, I misheard it. And this is true. I'm not just making this up. When Gareth said, what's he like? And Jess said, he's grumpy and he always tries to bite and kick me. I thought she was referring to Greg.
I
quickly realised that she was referring to the horse, Triple Eight. Now, that was very touching to me as well, because I was very good friends with Jess's dad, Alan. Jess and Amy's dad, Alan. And Kate's late husband, Alan. And Barbara's late son, Alan. And I used to work with him in Bacchus Marsh at Underbank Stud and the stock feed store, and saw the little girls grow up and all that. So it's going to be interesting having a chat to Father Brian Glasheen, who is a part owner of the horse, Dan, and he's a part owner almost out of gratitude from Greg and Jess.
Yeah, look, and this horse has already given him some pretty big thrills beforehand at running an Inter Dominion Grand Final, or getting close on 2 years ago now. And since then, the horse has come to Australia. So it's virtually his backyard. So it's come closer for him to see, but he hasn't seen much of it because we've been in lockdown the majority of the time. And it'll head on now to a Victoria Cup. And you can imagine any owner's dream would be to have a horse run in the biggest of the Group 1 races in Victoria. And Father Glasheen has been talking to his good friend upstairs for many, many years, and finally he's listened to him.
He has indeed. He did baptise... when you said, did he baptise me, Simone? He baptised my kids they were mature age baptisees. They were about seven. Because I wanted to get him to St. Bede's, which was the affordable private school. And my local priest, who I had never met because I'd never been to church there, I was advised to go and see him at the... whatever the church is in Cheltenham. And he said, you're not a familiar face in my flock. And I said, oh, because I tend to go to church in Bacchus Marsh. And he said, well, why don't you go and ask that priest?
Oh, really?
Then it started. Then that's how that all turned around, where the kids were baptised by Father Glasheen about five, six, 7 years ago or something, really. So I'm looking forward to having a chat to Glash, because, Simone, you know how there are certain areas that are greyhound areas, like Lara,
yes.
Carrum Downs, Devon Meadows?
Yes.
Bacchus Marsh, Dan, as you would know, and Melton, by extension, is dead-set harness racing country. They're everywhere, the training tracks, the Ginger Gleasons, the Langs, everyone. And Jessamy Park on the road to Geelong was where Alan trained his horses. And it's fascinating to me the role of the parish priest with such a rich harness racing community. And Father Glash was the glue for that that community. He retired a year or two ago, and he's now back living in Preston. So I am really looking forward to having a chat to Glash.
And just a note, guys, on Jess Tubbs. So we are up to episode 111 of Cracking the Code.
As if that's correct. You got it wrong when it was 100. So.
Oh, stop it. And
it was about the 93rd or something. She wasn't even within one.
Record-keeping, stop it. Well, if you cast your mind back, just over 2 years ago, our very first episode of Cracking the Codes, Jess Tubbs was a guest. And it was another emotional win for her and Greg a couple of nights before or the week before with TCB McRae. Dan, you would remember more about that than us, but it had been a couple of years since her father had passed away or something like that. So,
well, the horse hadn't won since he had passed away, and he was looking like a top-class horse and just become a bit of a non-winner. You know how people are very easy to classify horses that just don't win for a long period of time, and that's what happened. And he won on a big night. It was Breeders' Crown night, so there were Group 1 races all through the night. But as far as emotion was concerned, that was the first race on the program, and it really set up the scene. And, yeah, Jess was our very first guest. And I reckon Father Brian, he was probably about 3 months into Cracking the Code. So we had him on very early on. And he was talking about the very same horse, Triple Eight, which gives you a bit of a guide to the longevity of the harness horse. And if you get one, well, it doesn't have to be a Group 1 horse, but you can get a good run, a good ride with a harness horse. Obviously, staying sound is the key, but they're capable of running more regularly than a thoroughbred, and you can really enjoy it. And I'm sure Father Brian Glasheen is with Triple Eight. And look, there might even be better to come with the Victoria Cup and the Hunter Cup in the summer as well. So I think that it'll be a pretty special time in a year where there's no Ride High, there's no Lock and Var Art. King of Swing will be here, but if he draws the back line, it probably opens it up a little bit. So I think they would think they've got a real good chance.
Absolutely. And Alan Tubbs's funeral service was held at Tabcorp Park, Melton, in the big dining room there. So that would be about 4 years ago now. So that timeline, you're probably right there, Simone. Dan, I think we had a chat off air. I think you and I accidentally, the same year, had a very moulding experience on what was then Marlborough Cup Day at Caulfield. So I'll just tell you a little story, because Simone and I went to school across the road from each other. She was a bit older than me, so we sort of missed each other a bit generationally.
Is he lying again, right, Simone?
So, I don't think I need to. That's self-explanatory, isn't it?
Well, yes, exactly. So Adam Hamilton and I went to school together, right? So we were in Mr. Gibson's English class at the, you know how Marlborough Cup Day was a public holiday Thursday, but it wasn't for our school down in Geelong. So, and nor was Melbourne Cup Day, actually. Anyway, so Adam and I worked out that the Marlborough Cup, it was the year that Bart's mayor won it in 85. Anyway, I'll think of it. Trishel? Was it Trishel or something?
Yeah, that was in the Sangster colours, for memory. I think Trishel, wasn't it?
Yeah. So Adam and I
think that was Hayes.
Might have been. Adam and I jerried up the transistor radios, where we had the transistor radios on our laps, and then the cord was running up our school shirts with little earplugs in our ears so we could listen to it when he was... and he twigged because we finally sort of showed some interest in something at some point in his class, and he ripped the earphones out, and we heard the whole class heard the last 200 metres of the 1985 Vic Health Cup. And then the next year, Simone, we're in year 12, and there was a uni open day at either Melbourne University or Monash or something like that, and we were all diligently supposed to attend to learn all about where we may be going in life and that. And then someone said, you realise, of course, it's Marlborough Cup Day at Caulfield. So we caught the train to Caulfield instead. And I actually had brekkie with Anthony Doherty, the famous bookie, a few weeks ago when we weren't in lockdown, and he was talking about the last halcyon days of the racetrack, where the bookies ring was flourishing and crowds swirled around the track, and it just had that buzz. And there was still the old Guineas area at Caulfield, and that was the last The Vic Health Cup, Marlborough Cup I went to was that's what it represented to me, was just an amazingly big crowd, huge bookies ring, crowd sort of swirling around the racetrack and red brick buildings and all that sort of stuff. And Dan, that was the year that Bone Crusher won and Bill Collins said the modern day Big Red in the Underwood. Mm. Kenny Lass for Rick won the Marlborough Cup. And I reckon you might have been there practicing your craft up in the birds, the crow's nest.
It's funny how you remember things in your social or personal life, but I'll always relate them to a race date. And that particular day, we got brought up, it's had a few name changes, but at that time it was known as the Marlborough Cup. And yes, I would have been practicing, well, I remember it vividly, and they'd get a big crowd there. It was a terrific race day. It was the first Group 1 of the season as well. Like, things have changed a fair bit since then. And I called it Caulfield, just practicing into my tape recorder and the like. And from there, because I was, I would have been, 16 or 17 years old, so I then went there by train and went from Caulfield by train to Glenferrie to watch Hawthorn train, because it was only 2 days before the grand final. I remember they were playing Carlton, and they went through that period of playing all the grand finals through the 80s. So I've gone to Caulfield through the day and then to Caulfield train, and it was huge. There was a massive crowd out there at Glenferrie Oval. So the things that you would do back in the day, but I loved it. And that... when you think of it, we've got a Friday grand final eve holiday now, but really it's nothing like what the Thursday was. The Thursday was known as show day for the Royal Melbourne Show, obviously, but a huge race day for the thoroughbreds. And I just had a... maybe because we were young and more impressionable at that stage, I don't know, and perhaps we grew up with it, but it's almost a very shallow public holiday nowadays. Don't you think? Dead set.
Hey, Simone, were you a wagger every now and then? Did you, when Dan and I were at Caulfield, were you sneaking off to the Mad Mouse at the Melbourne Show?
No, I wasn't.
Mad Mouse.
I was too scared of getting caught.
And then the pirate
caught.
Ship came in, Dan.
Oh, no, I was too scared of those. I'm not a rides person. I am actually, when we went to Disneyland about 8 years ago, I said to my husband, I said, I don't like these rides. I'm not scared of dying. I don't like the momentum and the movement of these rides. And,
she was anxious, Dan.
I just don't.
Not over anxious though, was she?
No, she wasn't overthinking it.
I just know that I've never been one of these people to go on rides at the show. Maybe the Ferris wheel, and that's about it. And we're in Las Vegas, at Disneyland, and so you try and do everything that you can do, and you think, oh, that doesn't look too bad. And then there was one called Space Mountain, and it was in the dark. And I thought, oh, I said to the guy on the door, is it scary? He goes, no, it's all right. So silly me. I go in there. I was absolutely shaking when I got off. It was just the most horrible feeling of your stomach sinking and then being thrown around. And then I thought, I'm going to brave it and go on another one. And I went on one called Goofy's Flying School.
Sounds innocent enough.
Yeah. I was crying when I got off. I said to my husband, I said, I just don't like the movement, the sensation of being thrown around. It was... yeah, so I didn't, and so I don't know where I got to from that, or how I got to that. But as far as wagging school, to go to the Melbourne show and the Mad Mouse, no, I didn't. And I was always too scared of getting caught, that someone would see me if I was in my school uniform out in Geelong, so I didn't.
I pegged her as a non-wagger, Dan. I don't think she was part of our crew.
So boring. I'm very, very boring. So
I had when I went to high school, fortunately, I had a teacher, Frank Nolan. He owned a couple of horses with Quentin Scott. I remember he had a horse called Beauty Aid, and the principal of my high school, he liked his horse racing as well. So naturally, I got to know them as time went on, and they knew where my interests were. And there was one day I was at Flemington on a Wednesday, and I had taken the day off. Without being really sick. But, of course, I went there to practice. So when you look at it, I was still being
honing
educated.
Honing your craft, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, I bumped into the principal, and he just said to me, I won't tell if you won't tell.
You're both wagging.
His daughter was for a period, was my drama teacher, Catherine McClements. You remember the actress? I think she was in Water Rats and that sort of stuff.
Yes.
So Frank was my principal. And he, I must admit, he was a terrific guy, and I'd bumped into him at the races many times. I'm sure he would have been very proud as time went on. But it's funny you bump into certain people and they'd be aghast at it now, wouldn't they? But of course, at least I can put my hand up and say, well, I think some good things did come of it.
Oh, yeah. Craig actually came to life there. Catherine McClements, water rats, Craig? He's Googling her as we speak. He does that a lot, actually. Hey, guys, well, we've had a lovely old chat about wagging and all sorts of stuff and memories of Sir Rupert Clark Stakes Day, as it's known now. Dan, is there a standout Sir Rupert Clark Stakes winner or era for you? I think we've basically just encapsulated our era, didn't we, with Canny Lass and Wagon School and so on.
I can tell you one story. This is, you know, people's opinion might drop slightly of me here, but anyway, in 1988...
Well, you're already in the basement for some, so...
Rancho Ruler won, and what a great horse Rancho Ruler was. He captured everyone's imagination through the course of that spring. Anyway, I called that race for Channel 10. I was still a fledgling, but I'd you know, been there. Well, by that stage, I'd been there for about a year and a half. Anyway, after I'd gone back to Nutterwanning to be a part of the Eyewitness News, do my report on the races, I was then driving somewhere, must have been going out or going to play squash or tennis at night or whatever it was. Anyway, it caught the eye of police and...
The chopper did.
Anyway, I was driving, but there was
the
a police... It wasn't pursuit, but obviously saw me and, you know, and they deemed that, I wasn't displaying the P-plates correctly or various things that were not quite right with either my vehicle or the way I was driving. I don't think I was doing anything wrong, but it was enough for them to pull me over. And of course, you go through that period, can I check your license and all that sort of stuff, and it goes back to the car with the other person that was in the car, and I'm thinking, oh, here we go, you know what I mean?
Wasn't Catherine McClements in the car with you, was it?
No, it wasn't. I was on my own, I was riding solo, and the copper comes back to the car and said, he goes to me, oh, how good's that Rancho Ruler? Wasn't he brilliant today winning the Marlborough Cup? You know what I mean? I'm thinking, oh, so I don't know what I escaped that day, but I reckon he saved me a few hundred dollars because he was a racing fan.
Well, funny thing too, the day Rancho Ruler won the Vic Elth Cup, I'm sure it was that day, Bob Hawke was there and he was Prime Minister at the time. And I was standing in the mounting yard, and he didn't say it to me specifically, but he just said it as he walked past. He just went, what a nice horse. So there you go. Hey, Kyle Galley's going to pen a book, is he, Dan?
Well, Kyle does some amazing work and really consumes his time and in some hard-to-get stories and history and chronicles of racing, particularly the harness and the greyhounds in the Gippsland area. So he is looking for some extra information in his quest to find out more about the Terrelgan Harness Racing Club. And, of course, that follows on to the theme of our chat about the new greyhound track in Terrelgan last week. And for such a big place, the racing there of the three codes has been almost forgotten about at different times, hasn't it, over the last 20 years. So Kyle's chronicling a history which would turn into a book on the Terrelgan Harness Racing Club, but also four racetracks all through Gippsland. And he's got some fascinating information about racetracks that I wouldn't have even known
to existing. You know, this is my little thing, long-gone racetracks. This will be a good... Looking forward to that chat. Hey, and Simone, just before we... take a break and come back with the famous Father Brian Glasheen. Stake money increases in greyhound racing and a magnificent bonus for a three-time Country Cup winner this week as well.
That's right. So on Wednesday, the GRV board met and they approved the $1.5 million stake money increase that was proposed with the Greyhound Owners, Trainers, Breeders Association and Greyhound Racing Victoria. So $5.3 million effective the 1st of October, which is great news. So roughly just under $102,000 a week will be getting paid out to participants, which is great news. I won't go into the packages and everything, but there will be a 12% increase in metro and provincial. Fourth place will be paid out and there will be unplaced money. So it's one of those situations where you want to try and benefit the majority without... people have suggested you don't want to be rewarding mediocrity with, you know, lower grade races. But the reality is that there's two city meetings a week, and so you've got 24 races of your top class dogs. They're far more provincial and tier three, and we all want to have city dogs, we all want to have group race dogs, but that's just not how it operates. So I think that the fact that there's a lot of people going to benefit from this, and the greyhounds that are city class are generally the ones that take out the group one events, even the group two. So I think it's a positive step forward. GRV have indicated that they would like to engage with participants more. I mean, we've been wanting this for a long time. So if anything's come out of the strike action a couple of months ago discontent, I guess you could say, between GRV and participants, this is really good. It's positive steps. Not everyone may be pleased, but at least something has been done. And I think $5.3 million back into participants is something that we have to appreciate and be happy with.
Yeah, absolutely. Dan, I hear that argument that some say about you shouldn't reward mediocrity, and you do have to reward mediocrity across the three codes, as you just explained, Simone, because 70% of the thoroughbreds are country class. They're not city class. They're all entitled to be part of the ecosystem, part of the system. Those that aren't face an uncertain future across all three codes. We all know the reality of that. So this idea of only rewarding the elite and not mediocrity. Well, mediocrity in racing, A, people still bet on them, regardless if they're not the fastest. You know, they still are important for wagering, and they are entitled to a career just as much as the fast horses and dogs.
Yeah,
are.
Yeah, for sure.
And people will argue horses and greyhounds. A vet doesn't charge tier three prices or maiden prices for your greyhound or for your racehorses. No. A farrier's not going to charge less to put shoes on a provincial or a picnic racehorse as it is to a metro grade one. So I think we do have to keep that in perspective, because we're all paying the same amount for feed, for shoes, for everything
training.
That goes into training,
well,
animal
right.
husbandry. Well, so it's, and like I said, we all want to have the best of the best, but the reality is there's only a certain percentage that are the best of the best. So we do have to look after the rest of the industry, the animals that are keeping the ones at the top going as well.
Exactly.
So that's how I look at it.
I totally agree, and I think that elitist argument just does not stand up to the scrutiny of what these three sports are all about. Like the trainer at Birdship with three poorly bred trotters who just keeps persevering because he might win 1500 one night at Birdship or something like that. They have to be encouraged to continue, don't they? And the same analogy for the greyhound, you know.
Well, the industry's got to proceed, and while the medium of quality is probably dropped marginally, as you said, the horse and animal welfare, the greyhound welfare as well, is so important now, and part of that is those horses having opportunities to race at whatever level it would be. And we're more saturated with racing in the three codes now than we ever have been. It's quite different to what the landscape was 30 or 40 years ago. There were only X amount of options. Well, now there's a lot more, and we need it for all of those horses and for animal welfare.
Yep, and there's a lot more of Cracking the Codes coming up. You're listening to Cracking the Codes. It's Saturday morning. It's Sir Rupert Clark's Stakes Day. We're going to take a break and come back with Father Glasheen.
Loving their racing, pacing and chasing. Matt Stewart, Dan Malicki and Simone Fisher. Cracking the Codes.
Leader Max Delight back from a Sydney campaign. He was set alight at the start. He leads a metre right there. Wolf Stride, a proven Group 1 performer, and ready for the sprint lane is the Parwin Rocket, General Dodge. Triple Eight's out wide running on. Out even wider, out to play at the top of the lane. 27-2 down the back. The sprint on. Leader Max Delight, General Dodge gets the run. Triple Eight's coming down the middle. Triple Eight's taking the lead. General Dodge out to play late. Triple Eight is going to win the Caduceus Classic. Triple Eight first, General Dodge.
That was the Caduceus Classic at Bendigo last Saturday night, and a very, very happy, I think the Rosary Bees would have been getting a good run on the couch with a lap to go last Saturday night with Father Brian Glasheen, a dear old friend of mine, and he's a part owner of Triple Eight. How are you, Brian?
I'm very well, thanks, Matt. Yeah, great.
Yeah, were the Rosary Bees getting a good run?
I didn't think of the Rosary Bees. I was only just watching the horse. No worries. It was great.
Oh, it was great to have the horse in Australia now, because he's initially kicked off his career in New Zealand. It gave you some great thrills, Father, but you probably saw more of him in New Zealand, didn't you? Because since he's come here, he's been it's nearly been locked down all the way through.
Yeah, well, he's won three out of his last four starts, and I haven't been able to go to any. I've been sitting at home here on the couch by myself with no company, no nothing, just on my own.
Well, you're a bit different than most in that you are a former parish priest, and you're my parish priest down in Bacchus Marsh and a good friend of the family and so on. But like so many others, you are a retiree, and like everyone else through COVID, you are stranded at home. So what sort of a nice relief from the boredom has Triple Eight been in recent times during these difficult times, Brian?
Oh, it's magnificent, and particularly this time in, and Greg's done a marvellous job. He's taken all the gear off him, like he's raced in spreaders all his life in New Zealand, raced at a lugging pole, raced in deafness. So he's taken them all off him. He's back to basics. He's just the horse is probably loving it.
Brian, when you've got an interest in harness racing and you know quite a lot about it and the gear that you've just spoken about, is it hard to sometimes sit back and not give advice or not give suggestions or ask questions, or do you just entrust the trainer, as particularly Greg and Jess, that they know exactly what they're doing?
I keep out of the road. Shannon Nixon's our spokesman. He's our team leader, and he does all the talking with Greg and Jess. Although after the race, I sent Jess a congratulatory little thing on the phone, you know, that, it's great. It's a good team.
You've been in some big races already with the horse. He made an Inter-Dominion final, and earlier this year, a Hunter Cup, and now we've got a Victoria Cup looming. All you need is just a bit of help again from above, simply to be there, so that crowds can watch, or at least owners can turn up and watch their horses. Because it's only 3 weeks to the Victoria Cup now, Father, and your horse has emerged, or has certainly reminded everyone he's got a heap of ability, and he looks like he'll be a certain starter in that race. And dare I say, he looks a genuine chance.
Oh, he's a chance, all right. He's definite chance, and it'll be even better if Luke McCarthy decides it's COVID in the road and doesn't bring King of Swing down. But even with King of Swing, if he draws the second line and we draw, okay, although I think our horse is versatile, it doesn't matter where we draw. And we've got Greg the Candy Man, who's he's a little bit like Gavin Lane.
Oh, yeah, Miss Gavin a lot. Your man upstairs can't do anything about COVID, can he, by the way? We're a bit over it by now. Is there any chance?
Oh, well, the best I can do, I got a permit the other day to go to Bacchus Marsh and do a funeral, and I've got another funeral, I think, at Bacchus Marsh on Tuesday. But I can get a permit for that, but that's about all I can do.
Brian, you were the parish priest for a long, long time in Bacchus Marsh, and it has always been a tight-knit community, and it's also a very harnessy and thoroughbreddy community as well. There used to be a sign on the outskirts of Bacchus Marsh saying you're entering thoroughbred country, and I always thought it's more harness country than thoroughbred country, and you represented the Bacchus Marsh community, but you also represented the harness community within the Bacchus Marsh community, really, didn't you?
Oh, yes. And like, even Melton. Melton, I think it might have had a signed thoroughbred country, but there were more trotting establishments in Melton than there was thoroughbred. I think at one stage there was something like, not sure whether it was 60 or 100 individual people in the Melton Shire that were registered as trotting trainers.
Father, you touched...
Bacchus Marsh was even greater. Not so many in Bacchus Marsh, but some very successful people like Alan Tubbs and Jimmy O'Sullivan. Jimmy was Tool and Vale, I think. And
Ginger Gleason out on the Geelong Road.
He was out on the Tool and Vale Road.
That's right,
Jimmy, and he was also down at Harkness Road. I think he was next door to Graham Lane. You know.
Fred, the thoroughbreds we were touching on there. I remember a time, Fred Kersley, of course, with his background, and you would know so well through the harness racing, he got you to bless Northerly before he won the Australian Cup earlier this century, or I think it was about 2001 or 2002.
That's true. Yeah, it was funny. I was Hunter Cup night at Moonee Valley, and I went into the press room, and Fred was there, and I sat down and had a drink with Fred. And he said, "What are you doing Monday week?" And I said, "Is that Labor Day?" And he said, "Oh," he said, "I've got a horse running. Will you come and bless it?" Anyway, I never heard of Northerly, and I went there. And anyway, just as I walked through the gate, Judy, Fred's wife, said to me, "You been to bless the horse?" And I said, "Not yet." She said, "Well, I'm coming with you because you're going to have trouble." I said, "Why am I going to have trouble?" I said, "Oh, well, the strapper thinks she owns the horse and she won't let you near it." I went down and the two women started fighting. And while they were fighting, the horse was looking around like he'd never heard so much noise as he was hearing at Flemington. Then he noticed me. And I kept lowering my hand. Then I got a hand up behind his ear and then up in the jowl. And he completely relaxed. I said a prayer. When he finished, he licked my hand like a calf licks your fingers if you're feeding them milk, you know.
Yeah. And, that's what the disciples did, didn't they?
Strapper said, "I don't believe it. He hates people. He only loves two people, the boss and me." But after the horse sat three wide the whole race in the Australian Cup and bolted in, even she wanted me to bless it every time.
You had a full-time gig. And I reckon it's not the first time you've done that either. Hey, I was telling Simone and Dan off-air about when I got my two boys, Max and Ollie, baptised by you when they were a little bit older than most kids get baptised. And we went back to the presbytery. It wasn't mandatory, but I remember there may have been a bottle of Jariff that exchanged hands from Rutherglen.
Yes.
But you showed me these amazing, beautiful portrait photos of harness of trotters back in the day in their simple gear. And what listeners might not know is that there's a strong connection to Les Carline. You're closely related there, and there is a very rich background with you in horse loving, really, isn't there, and particularly harness racing?
Yes. Well, see, Paddy Glasheen was my grandfather, and his brother Edward Glasheen, who was the chief groom and really the stud master for Weavers at Bort, and Bort was a centre of the trotting world 100 years ago. And he trained people like Billy McKay, who was a famous trotting and a famous galloping trainer, Tommy Butterworth, who went to South Australia and became the leading light over there. And, that's Les's grandfather. And Ted was the father of Dorry Glasheen, and she married Les Carline, Les's father. And so Les, like Dad and Dorry are first cousins, and Les and I are second cousins, you know.
Yeah. It's a shame he didn't write more about harness racing, isn't it, Brian? He wrote so beautifully about the thoroughbreds. I'm sure he touched on the harness, but it would have been lovely to get his harness racing through the lens of Les Carline, wouldn't it?
Oh, it would have been fantastic. And he used to show up at big meetings at Moonee Valley. I'm not sure who invited him, but he'd appear out of nowhere at a lot of those big meetings, and like a Hunter Cup or Winfield Cup or Derby or something like that. But his heart was very much, it was in the gallopers, but it was also in the trotters. And I can remember at Gower Park, we had a big gymkhana for the Panch, Preston North Community Hospital, and I drove Gleaming Light this day and ran second. Grand Monarch was off 24 yards. I was off the front, but Grand Monarch, who would be like an M40, he won so many. And of course, he's in the breeding of Maori's Idol. Maori's Idol is out of a Grand Monarch mare or something like that. But had a big thrill, and I reckon that day Les was there helping me yoke up before I drove.
Well, there you go. Hey, what was it like being the parish priest in Bacchus Marsh? I know attendances probably dropped away as time went on, and the town grew and grew and grew. I'm not sure how many of your harness mates were in the in the at the sermons or in the masses. What was it like over the decades as it progressed, being the parish priest at the Catholic Church in Bacchus Marsh?
It was great, and I worked with the other churches like the Anglican Church and the Uniting Church and Baptist Church and all born again crowd, revivalists, I think it was. But we all worked together, and it was a happy place. And in fact, the guys in Triple Eight, they're all like Shannon Nixon. I did his wedding and baptised his kids. Shane Cook, I think I did his wedding and baptised his kids. And Joel Watson, I was supposed Joel came and asked me to do his wedding, and I said, look, I'm already doing a wedding here in Bacchus Marsh. And he said, oh, well, you can't do that. You've got to come to the reception. So, and I went off to Dale's at the reception and got me to make a speech there. So I had a long association with the Watsons. Well, his mother was a saint. Charlie Sate was his grandfather, and Charlie Sate came from Charlton and Ascot Vale.
What'd you say the surname was? Saint?
Yeah, I thought you meant saint. Beatified.
No, his mother was a saint. That's
S-A-I-T.
Right.
Joel's mother's Nolene and Don. Don is good, the transport, the baker.
Don Watson.
All that sort of business. His father was tragically killed at Bathurst.
I remember, and he was a friend of my father's as well. That was probably 15 years ago, Brian, wasn't it?
Or it'd be more than that. I reckon it'd be 20 years ago, 25 years ago.
Absolutely. Hey, Brian, thanks so much for joining us on Cracking the Codes this morning. Looking forward to seeing Triple Eight in the Victoria Cup, and hopefully by then the crowds will be able to be there and we can have a beer on the front lawn at Tabcorp Park, Melton.
Yes, and let's hope he wins the Kilmore Cup before it.
Absolutely. All right, we'll be cheering him on. Thanks for joining us.
Good on you. Thanks, Matt.
And Kyle Galley joined us this morning because you're chronicling the Terrelgan Harness Racing Club, and it can't be that easy. We like looking for fossils of dinosaurs, I would imagine, and see if we can help out and provide some extra avenues. Good morning.
Good morning, Dan, and good morning, Simone and Matt as well. Yeah, thanks for the opportunity.
Good morning, Kyle. Hey, Dan, you're not far off, actually. The dinosaur fossils aren't far from Terrelgan, down that way generally, down in Blockway. So you weren't far off with the dinosaur fossils.
Well, they might have had racetracks there because Kyle has fascinatingly found an incredible amount of racetracks right throughout Gippsland, virtually going towards the New South Wales border. Tell us about that. I don't reckon I'd know 99 of them, Kyle.
Well, I must say that the credit for it, the background detail, should actually go to John Peck, who, of course, is well-known in harness racing through his time at the Harness Racing Council. And John's a go-to for anyone with history questions and that sort of thing. He's been doing a lot of research on the various towns in Victoria that conducted trotting races over the years, right throughout the state, and particularly in Melbourne as well. And it's probably a topic for another day as well, just on the amount of different places, particularly in Melbourne and suburbs, where there were race courses, whether they be whippet racing or dogs, trots, horses, whatever it might be. But I asked him for a list of the towns so that I could put something in with the Terrelgan history and mention some of these other towns. And he came back with about 80 different towns, just at a quick glance. But there's probably more on top of that, which I would think would bring it up to about 100.
That's just extraordinary. And Dan and Simone and I have spent a lot of time talking about, you know, the old days of Aspendale, Mentone, Epsom, the Richmond Whippets and Williamstown and all sorts of amazing tracks, and they just grow and grow and grow. And there are so many, and the country ones as well. You notice it when you go through country towns where there's no racetrack but there's a racecourse road.
Yeah.
There used to be one at Main Dample, I remember. So it's the same with it's the same with the harness tracks, Kyle, is it, as the gallops tracks? They were just everywhere at one point.
Yeah, well, the majority of these townships would have been an event. So, for example, if you look down at, say, around Phillip Island, there might have been one trotting race that John's found from an old newspaper from, say, at Bass, which is on the way to Phillip Island in 1916 or something like that. But it would have been at perhaps a sports carnival.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened in those days was you'd have wood chops cycling races, etc., at the local recreation reserve, and every second farmer had a trotter. So you'd put on a trotters race and call for entries, and they'd post their entries in. And what that meant is you'd actually, if you had a race on like that, you'd actually be able to get a bookmaker as well, which meant that people could have a bet. So it sort of opened up. And in more recent times, talking recent meaning the 1930s and that sort of thing, if you got three or four bookmakers there, then they could also field on Melbourne. So Melbourne races would come on the radio and they'd take bets during the day. And that added to the atmosphere of the day. So that's what you'll find is why there was a trot run, so that you could get the bookmakers there and make a real day of it. There were probably about six different places in Gippsland where you would have an extension of that, where they actually ran trotting meetings or built a trotting track or started up a trotting club. The majority of the races would have been, you know, you would have had a race meeting where there would have been a hurdle, a steeplechase, one or two pony races, a trot, and, you know, a grass-fed race or something like that. So whatever horses were in the district were all combined to run at a race meeting at Bairnsdale, and there might have been a trot run there as well. That's what most of these races would have been.
Kyle, where do you get this information from? Old newspaper clippings? Are you relying on the public who may still have an interest in racing? Is it libraries? Is it historical societies? Yeah. I'm thinking it might not be very easy to come across newspaper articles from 1916 that, you know, may suggest there was a trot race on a local show or something.
Yeah, so I think a lot of John's research has come from visits to the State Library over the journey. He's been working on bits and pieces for a long time because, as far as I know, his research is results of races that were never published in a yearbook. We had a yearbook for the harness racing every year for a number of years, but there are gaps over several decades where a yearbook wasn't published, so he's sort of filling the gaps at the moment with those. So you can go to the State Library and look up. A lot of the more popular newspapers are on microfilm and are available on site, and you pop them on the reader and have a look through and print and copy and that sort of thing, or take notes. Other more obscure papers are held in bound copies, and you order those in. So if you wanted to go and have a look at the trotting weeklies, you can order the archive bound books in, and they'll bring them in and sit down and you can read through them. But the other thing that's come in probably in the last 10 years or so is a fantastic website called Trove, which is a federal government initiative, and a lot of old newspapers are digitised on Trove. They can be searched, so you can go in and run a search for, let's say, just for argument's sake, Traralgon Trot. You can type Traralgon Trot in and you can list the dates, so you can look up all the Victorian newspapers on Trove, and not everything is on there, from, say, 1st of January 1932 to the 31st of December 1932, and it will physically pull out every article that mentions Traralgon Trot. And then with John's list of dates, I can then match up and read the articles about the race meetings on the dates that they were run.
It is. It's huge. I don't know how you can find the time to do it or necessarily the resources to get to these pearls of information. You're chronicling the history of the Traralgon Harness Racing Club, but, of course, you're also calling out for anyone that might have some sort of memorabilia, videos, clippings and the like, and if they do have them, how can they get in touch with you?
Well, you can probably, easiest way is give us a call at the Warrigal Harness Racing Club, which is 56222008, and they'll put you in touch with me. And, yeah, we're looking for any material, really, even relating to Warrigal, old videos or clippings and that sort of thing. And we copy, or I copy everything and give you the originals back, so I don't want to keep things that might be of sentimental value and that sort of thing, but there must be bits and pieces out there. A photograph came recently which popped up on Twitter and I managed to secure it. The person was looking to give it a good home, and that was a photo of a race finish of a trotting race at Narnagoon in about 1938, and that popped up in an op shop in Perth. So that's made its way back here. It's amazing where things end up.
It is indeed, and hopefully a lot of them will end up in your book that will be out at some point about the history of the Traralgon Harness Racing Club. Kyle, good on you. We've run out of time, but good on you and well done. And it's always fascinating with the history of racetracks, and we look forward to reading some material from you in the future.
Yeah, it'll be a while away yet, but in the spare time, just chipping away at it. But yeah, if anyone can help with anything at all, it would, of course, be much appreciated.
Terrific. Good on you, Kyle.
Okay, thanks, Sam.
Carl Galley there, who is chipping away, as he says, on a book about the history of Traralgon. Guys, we have raced to the end of another episode of Cracking the Code. Simone, you have a lovely day.
Thank you. You too. Have a good weekend.
Dan, you have a successful day on the punt.
Thank you, and you too. And we'll try to find those winners a little bit later on in the morning.
We will indeed. We'll see you next week.